At some point, you've probably had to take a personality test. Perhaps you had to take a personality test before you got a job. Perhaps you took one out of curiosity when you were cruising through Facebook and you saw a link to a personality test. Because we all don't know our personalities well enough, we have to have a website with a bunch of test questions tell us who we are. But at some point taking this personality test, perhaps you came across two different personality traits, extroversion and introversion. And I wonder, what did the test tell you about you? Are you an extrovert or are you an introvert? The first one refers to people who are outgoing, thus the name extrovert. Your personality is always on the outside. You tell people how you feel. You talk a lot. You love being around people also. And if that's what an extrovert is, then just look up in the dictionary introvert and you'll find a picture of Rebecca. Hey, she admits it. She's not trying to hide it from anybody. She's just trying to hide herself from everybody. But an introvert is somebody not necessarily who is shy or who doesn't like being around people, but it's a person who's not recharged by being around people. I think the best definition that I have ever heard of the difference between introverts and extroverts is that introverts need to recharge their batteries through being alone before they can go out and be around other people. Extroverts recharge their batteries by being around other people. So at a social gathering, for example, the introvert shows up with a full battery and is worn out by the end of the evening. An extrovert shows up with an empty battery and is only just getting started when 10 o'clock rolls around. The extrovert is the one pulling out board games at 10 o'clock at night going, "Hey, how come everybody's going home right now?" I think that's the best definition that I've ever seen. There are some misunderstandings about extroverts and introverts, and those misunderstandings can be very harmful if we don't get them out of the way. Like I said, some people assume that introverts are just shy or don't like being around people or are unfriendly, and that is absolutely not the case. Most introverts like people just fine, and most introverts will even have a very close-knit, if small, group of friends that they're very intimate with. Extroverts, on the other hand, sometimes people assume that extroverts are obnoxious or are always out to suck everybody else's energy from the room. Extroverts like to tell people what to do. Extroverts can sometimes be very aggressive with their energy. And again, those aren't always necessarily true. I think it's more the case that we all have some combination of introversion and extroversion, that we're all one or the other in different parts of our lives. I know plenty of people, for example, in the church who are incredibly extroverted around other Christians. But when they get out in the rest of the world around people who don't share their morals, who don't share their worldview, they can become quite introverted. And of course, the opposite is true as well, of people who seem to have plenty of friends out there in the world who are always busy, at least based on what they're doing on their Facebook page, but when it comes to activities of the church, they don't seem to show up very often. Now, in a congregation, I believe in a healthy congregation, you have to have both introverts and extroverts, and some combination of the two of them can be very good, not just for a church's social life, but for a church's evangelism, and for a church's worship, and for the work that we're supposed to be doing in a congregation to take care of our own members. Let's consider a few things about the way that God values both qualities of extroversion and introversion. First of all, the Bible often shows godly people, very godly people, who possess various degrees of either personality trait. Isaac, for example, who I don't think anybody would say was a total introvert, valued his quiet time, though. We read in Genesis chapter 24, verse 63, that he went out to the evening to meditate in a state that I would assume to be a regular practice. We need our quiet time. Times of reflection and meditation, times where we can get things out of the way in our minds to look inward for a while. organize our thoughts. Moses also. Moses has a lot of qualities of extroversion, doesn't he? He has a lot of courage. He's a man who certainly tells people how he feels. We just got done studying about the wilderness wanderings, didn't we? We've seen in Moses' own life, in 40 years in the wilderness, was there ever a time that Moses didn't tell you exactly how he felt? And yet, I think when you really read about his life, I don't think he enjoyed doing what he did. There's never any point in the 40 years of wilderness wanderings where Moses seems to like being the shepherd of Israel. If anything, there are different points in those 40 years where he begs God, asks God to get out of the job that he's doing. You remember at the very beginning of all things, that is to say, the beginning of his work as the shepherd of Israel, after spending 40 years in the land of Midian, God talks to him through the burning bush and tells him what his job is. Does Moses seem all that excited about the prospects of what he's supposed to do with Israel? And several times during the wilderness wanderings, he asks God that if this is what it's going to be like for me, just kill me now. Just kill me now. I would say in summing up Moses' time with Israel, that he was quite lonely and valued the close group of friends that he had and the quiet time that he could share with those friends. The prophets in the Old Testament came in all shapes and sizes, so to speak. There were loners like Jeremiah and Elijah. Jeremiah and Elijah, I think, at different times in their life, preferred to just be alone, to just have some quiet time to themselves. And when confronted with the frustrations of the people around them, wanted nothing more than to be alone in the wilderness. But there were also very outgoing men among the prophets, people who vigorously jumped into public service, people like Daniel and Nehemiah and Zechariah and Haggai, people who put themselves out there for the public to view, people who put themselves out there to do jobs, work that required an incredible degree of extroversion to accomplish. And then there's Jesus. Jesus, who could preach in front of thousands. Jesus, who was brave enough to engage social outcasts. Jesus, who was upending tables in the temple and upsetting the ruling class. Jesus, who was willing to speak out in synagogues like in Nazareth, even though it meant nearly being thrown off a cliff. Jesus, who was truly unmatched in his ability to be outgoing and extroverted. This same Jesus relished loneliness and quiet, reflection and meditation. This same Jesus who said exactly what was on his mind also took every opportunity he could to go within his own mind. We see, for example, in Matthew 14, verse 13, and in Mark 1, verse 35, Mark chapter 6, verse 46, and very memorably in Luke 5, verse 16, where it says that he would often slip away to go be by himself. And in Luke 6, in verse 12, Jesus appreciated times of reflection. And he truly embodies both the best of introversion and extroversion. My friends, the diversity of these personalities only makes us stronger. The diversity only helps us as a congregation. And if you have some combination of both introversion and extroversion, then I think that diversity only makes you stronger and more interesting as a person. Everybody has something to offer in a church, no matter what kind of personality you have. Sometimes we assume that the very public jobs that need to be done, preaching and teaching and song leading, serving as an elder or as a deacon, that those are the most important jobs to be done. And yet, there are important jobs, equally important jobs that happen behind the scenes, behind the veil. Jobs that you don't see in public, jobs that require not the extrovert to do them, but the introvert, the person who can go one-on-one and talk, the person who understands what it means to be lonely, the person who understands what it means to struggle with loneliness. And that's a job that an extrovert can have a very hard time doing. Consider a few scriptures that explain the value of this diversity in our gifts and our talents and our personalities. In Ephesians 4 and verse 16, notice what it says here about the fully functioning body, which is the church. He says back in verse 14, for context, as a result, we're no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects to Him who is the head, even Christ. I believe he means not just to grow up as individuals, but to grow up as a church, to grow up as a congregation. Monte Vista must grow up in all aspects into Him. Verse 16. From whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by that which every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. Notice a couple of phrases that are important. We are fitted and held together by that which every joint supplies. Every joint supplies something, doesn't it? Every joint does something. Now, some joints are very obvious, like your knees and your elbows, joints that you like to throw around in a game of basketball on the playground. Other joints are a little less obvious. But every joint supplies something. But every joint can only supply something when, as it says, it is properly working, according to the proper working of each individual part. You are only contributing to the growth of the congregation when you are being you. Now, we'll talk about this idea later on in the lesson of, well, it's just how I am when it comes to personality. False. So certainly the Apostle Paul, myself, and not anybody else who understands the Bible is going to tell you that if you have a sin in your life or you have a bad personality trait that you just need to go on being you and accept it for what it is. But you are only causing the growth when you are you and when you take the gifts and the talents, the abilities, and yes, even your own particular unique personality and put it into service as God designed it. That includes the introvert as well as the extrovert. That includes the very outgoing person as much as it includes the person who's very reflective and inwardly focused. We need every part to do something, but every part can only do what it is supposed to do. It's proper working. The same thing is said in the book of 1 Corinthians as well. When you notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, the Apostle Paul once again uses the body as a model for the church. He begins in verse 12 saying, "For even as the body is one and yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though they are many, are one body, so also is Christ." And he goes on to describe in verse 14, "For the body is not one member but many. If the foot should say, 'Because I am not a hand, I am not a part of the body,' it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, 'Because I am not an eye, I am not of the part of the body,' it is not for this reason any less a part of the body." Now, the foot and the ear, the eye and the hand all have their own unique talents. They do what they're designed to do. They do what they're best at. And he goes on to say, "If the whole body," verse 17, "were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, well, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed the members, each one of them in the body, just as He desired. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body." Many members, but one body. Many people with many different skills and many different qualities and many different personalities that make up one congregation. Where do you fit in? What place, what role, what capacity do you fill in this congregation? We'll look at Romans chapter 12 a little bit later in the lesson, but I do want to point out this, that in Romans 12, beginning in verse 4, everybody can do something in that passage. Everybody can do something. Now, there's a lot that we can learn from each other. And introverts or extroverts, whatever you are, one personality is not better or more useful than the other. They are what they are, and I believe there's a lot we can learn from each other. I'm going to fill you in a little secret here. If it's a mystery to you, it might be quite shocking. I'm a bit of an extrovert. I like people, and I like being around people. But can you just, I know, it's horrifying to imagine this, but can you imagine if this room was filled with 200 of me? I know, that's even a nightmare for me. Now, I could flip the role there, okay? And I could say, imagine what it would be like if we had 200 Rebeccas or 200 Vanessas. And I could flip the role around and we would be as equally ineffective as a congregation with one extreme as the other. But in a group of 200 people where we have this incredible diversity of personalities, what can we accomplish and learn from each other as a group? So what I want to do is offer you three things that we can learn from each other. And I hope, my goal is to present these three lessons in a way where each one can learn something from the other, where I don't present them as introversion or extroversion is better than the other, but each one can learn something from the other. The first one is this. Introspection leads to mature faith. So introspection is good. Being an introverted person is very good to have time to meditate and reflect, to study, to pray. That is incredibly good, and it is both a sign of mature faith, and I believe leads to increasing maturity in your faith. But if you don't share it, it's not worth anything. So you see then that both introspection and extrospection, introversion and extroversion, are valuable. We must be introverted enough to study and to pray and to meditate, to learn, to grow, and to be mature in our thinking. To not be afraid of going inside. But we must also be courageous enough, extroverted enough, that we can share the conclusions that we've come to. I like the way that Solomon put it. At the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, he had this to say in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, where he says in verse 9, "In addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs." Look at that. That's both qualities, isn't it? He taught the people knowledge, but he also pondered and searched out and arranged. He sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. Now, he goes on to say in verse 11 of Ecclesiastes 12, "The words of wise men are like goads. Masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They're given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body." The extreme that he's talking about there is the person who only spends his time inside of his own mind, who spends his time only reading and never sharing, always studying but never teaching. Both qualities, I believe, are required of the Christian to some degree. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6. Let's see what a New Testament writer has to say on this as well. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, beginning in verse 6, he says, "In pointing out," and again, notice please, notice the way that there's both introspection and extrospection in this passage, okay? "In pointing out these things to the brethren, you will be a good servant of Christ Jesus, constantly nourished on the words of the faith and of the sound doctrine which you've been following. Have nothing to do with worldly fables, fit only for old women. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness." I think that discipline has to happen on the inside. "For bodily discipline is only of little profit, but godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come." He says in verse 9, "It is a trustworthy statement deserving full acceptance. For this we labor and strive, because we have fixed our hope on the living God, who is the Savior of all men, especially of believers." Now, in verse 11, the extrovert, "Prescribe and teach these things. Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech and conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe." To show yourself, to put yourself out there as an example. But in verse 13, don't be afraid to go inside as well. Until I come, give attention to the reading of Scripture, to exhortation and teaching. Do not neglect the spiritual gift that is, what does he say? Within you, which was bestowed upon you. He says in verse 15, take pains with these things, be absorbed in them so that your progress may be evident to all. Pay close attention to yourself and your teaching inside you. Persevere in these things, for as you do this, you will ensure salvation both for yourself and for those who hear you. But the second lesson that we can learn from each other is this, that solitude can be very energizing. Like, we're very afraid of solitude sometimes, especially for extroverts like me. We don't like solitude. We like to be around people. And in my job, if you want to call it a job, I have to spend a lot of time by myself. Brian just experienced it this last week. He came to vacuum the church building, and I followed him around like a puppy all over the building. He's emptying garbage cans and rearranging songbooks to tidy up the auditorium. I'm just following him around, just talking to him. Sherilyn knows what it's like also. When I'm here at the same time that she is cleaning the building, it takes her twice as long, easily, to get done what would take her just not that much time. So it can be kind of lonely sometimes being a preacher. Oh, so sad. But you know, solitude can be very energizing. To have the quiet time to rest our minds and to think and to ponder and to meditate. But the flip side is this. It is unhealthy to seek total separation from other people. I've always liked the way Proverbs 18 verse 1 puts it. Notice this with me if you will. Proverbs 18 verse 1, speaking of the one who seeks his own desire, he says, he who isolates himself seeks his own desire, and he quarrels against all sound wisdom. One time when we were on a long road trip together, and I mean long road trip in the middle of nowhere, dust as far as the eye could see. And in the middle of nowhere off this state highway, there was a road called Hermit Road. And won't you believe Rebecca saw Hermit Road and she said, that's where we need to live. And that's funny. We can laugh about that. But I do believe both sides of this are true, that solitude is very energizing for us, but it's unhealthy to seek a total separation from other people. We need our alone time, but friends, we also need each other. We need each other. And the third thing is this. We must be bold enough to say what needs to be said. That's the extroversion right there. But we must be smart enough to know when to keep our mouths shut. And if only we could find just the perfect balance between the loudmouth extrovert and the shy, mousy introvert. Because somewhere in the middle there's a combination of the two that will actually get things done. My favorite verse of the verses on here, by the way, I love all these. I encourage you to study these on your own time. But my favorite one of all of these is James 1, verse 19. For the writer James has this to say, this you know, my beloved brethren, but let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. In the book of Proverbs, it says that in an abundance of words, there is sin. Sometimes we extroverts need to learn to close our mouths a little bit and not say just everything that's on our minds. But the introvert could help us out a little bit and tell us at least a little of what's on your mind. There are some personality challenges, whatever personality you happen to have, some things to keep in mind, just some things to watch out for as we bring our lesson to a close. Be careful that you're not using your personality trait as an excuse for sin. We need to be very careful about that because sometimes when you have a hot temper, for example, you're just real short fuse. Sometimes we just dismiss that as saying, well, it's just how I am. I'm a hot-tempered man. You know, you just got to watch out for me and walk on eggshells around me. That's just how I am. But I don't think that Paul, writing in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, thinks that it's okay to just sweep under the rug anger issues just because they happen to be personality traits. Sarcasm is the same way. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, it talks about what we should say. Let no unwholesome words proceed out of your mouth, but only say what is edifying and encouraging and what builds up another person. He would go on in chapter 5 of the same book to talk about humor in the first part of that chapter, and that we need to be careful that we watch out for coarse language. And sometimes we dismiss our own personal style of humor, saying, well, I'm just a naturally sarcastic person, or I just kind of have a coarse sense of humor. It's just how I am. And again, I don't think that the Apostle Paul is all that impressed with people who just ignore sin and just claim it as a personality trait. Or how about shyness that is of such an extreme degree that it leads to cowardice? I know there are shy people, I get that. But there are things that are asked of us by God that go beyond just shyness. And if you're a coward, well, don't just call yourself shy. Call yourself what you are. Revelation 21 verse 8 gives this list of sins of those who will be in the lake of fire at the end of all things. And among those sins, quite surprisingly, is cowardice. Or independence to the point of self-reliance and rebellion. Read about the false teachers in 2 Peter chapter 2. And in fact, I want to point out exactly what he has to say here about those false teachers who will not be left unpunished at the end of all things, he says in verse 10, and especially those who indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority, being daring and self-willed, they do not tremble when they revile angelic majesties. I know that we know people who have naturally independent personalities, and they can be fine on their own. But if you're so independent that you want to have nothing to do with God's church, and you're so independent that you don't believe that you need to participate in corporate worship, and you're so independent that you might not even need Jesus, well, you've crossed a boundary from personality trait to sin. We need to remember that if something is a sin, it's a sin. And I don't care if it's your natural personality to commit that sin. James 4 verse 17 says, for those who know the right thing to do and do not do it, it is sin. How about thinking that every personality trait is static? What I mean by that is that just because you are a certain way, you believe that you'll always have to be a certain way. That you can't change who you are. You can't change your personality after all, right? But you know, in Colossians chapter 3, there are certain personality traits listed in Colossians chapter 3 that should be changed, and that I believe can be changed and have been changed by many in the past. He says in Colossians 3 and verse 5, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion. That's one. People say, I'm just a naturally passionate person. Don't let your passion lead you into sin, though. Evil desire, greed, which amounts to idolatry, for it is on account of these things that the wrath of God will come. In them you also once walked when you were living in them, but put them all aside. And listen to this. These, I think, we would often consider to be personality traits. Put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech, put them out of your mouth. Don't lie to one another, since you've laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. Maybe you should strive to become less and less like your natural personality and to become more and more like Jesus Christ. That is, after all, the image into which we were reborn. And finally, watch out. Your unique personality should never be seen as a handicap or a hindrance to you. That whatever your personality is, introvert, extrovert, or some combination of the two, you are who you are. Now again, with the caveat being that if who you are is a sinner, then that needs to be changed. But sinning aside, you are who you are. So rather than seeing yourself as handicapped because you're shy, or seeing yourself as handicapped because you're a loudmouth, why don't you take those personality traits and find a way in God's kingdom to serve Him and serve others? Which gets us back to Romans chapter 12. We read in Romans chapter 12 one of the great one another passages of the things that we do for each other, as he says in verse 4, just as we have many members in one body, and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let each exercise them accordingly, if prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith, if service, in his serving, or he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, or he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, and he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. He goes on to say, let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted to one another in brotherly love, giving preference to one another, never lagging behind in service, diligent, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, and practicing hospitality. And in one of my favorite verses in all the New Testament, we've got to learn to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. And I say to you most assuredly, you can do something from Romans 12. No matter who you are, no matter how young or old you are, no matter how experienced or inexperienced you are as a Christian, you can do something out of Romans 12. Put your personality to use then. Put your uniqueness into God's service. Now, if you're not a Christian, you really ought to be. Because until you become a Christian, until you're born, until you are remade into the image of Jesus Christ, well, it doesn't matter what your personality is. You've missed out on the greatest personality trait of all. Please, listen to the message of Jesus Christ as he says in Mark 16, verse 16, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. So if you have any spiritual need at all, then let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.